You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony.
There are so very many ways of being double that it can become painful to try thinking about it for too long. A shadow is as much a doppelganger as a face in the mirror is. Some duplicates stare at each other, unblinking, the closer together they become. Others stalk in spirals, if not unaware of the existence of a second self, then certainly hoping that they may never cross paths. They may hover before a foggy reflection in the dark, eyes closed so as to never see the shapes upon the glass warping inward from either side. Some have far too many eyes between them. Some have none at all. Others take it in turns. And some seem to find themselves to be forever on opposite sides of a great invisible war.
Hannah Gammon is a South African writer based in Cape Town. Her first short story, The Undertaker's Apprentice, won the Commonwealth Short Story Prize. Her new novel from Tartarus Press is The Specimens. Thank you for joining me, Hannah.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
This is a wonderful novel, and the story is a wonderful story. And it makes me wonder a bit about your approach to writing, because this novel is so unusual. I must admit that most novels I read are probably easily described as thrillers, and most of them are easily adaptable into movies. This is a thrilling book to read, but that's because you take us places with your prose that we could not get to in a movie. We could not get to in a thriller. Talk about your understanding of storytelling. It's as if your stories are dreams, almost.
Yes, I was for this story and for my writing in general, I was very inspired by dreams and about subconscious states of mind. I did want to, some of the scenes I did write intentionally to feel very dreamlike and very surreal. And I was very inspired by other writers, other artists who have similar surreal kind of dreamlike ways of telling their stories. One of my big inspirations was David Lynch. And I was also very inspired by a lot of the literary and artistic movements of the 1920s, which was where you really start to see a lot of exploration of the subconscious, a lot of more surrealistic and expressionistic ways of thinking. The German expressionist movement in particular was a very big influence on me. And there are a few references to that in the novel.
When I read this book, what I first thought of was Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, told from entirely from the perspective of the monster, as opposed to the doctor who creates him. So I'm wondering, I think that one of the real super strengths of this novel is the decision to tell the story entirely from BEC-04's point of view, and that's as much of a name as we ever get in this novel. I don't want to give any spoilers, but I will say that is the name of the character. Talk about deciding to tell a story from the perspective of a monster who is not exactly human.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned Frankenstein, because that is another huge inspiration to me. It's one of my favorite books. The first time that I read it, I immediately empathized with the character of the monster.
And, you know, one of the things, too, I thought about as I read this book, especially the opening, was that, as I understand it, Mary Shelley was at the famous weekend retreat with her husband and some of the writers, and that she had a nightmare where she woke up and saw the face of the creature hovering over her. And that image hovered over me throughout reading this novel.
Yes, I did want to very intentionally, when I was writing this novel, want to work with the archetype of the monster, of this uncanny being that is but is not quite human. And I definitely wanted to write a story from the perspective of the outsider, of the other. I also don't want to spoil too much, but the other is quite a central concept to the story. And I really just wanted to work with how otherness has been portrayed in the horror genre. Otherness in many different forms. Here I'm working a lot with psychiatric otherness.
You know, one of the things too that I loved about this novel is your sense of horror. It's not a sense of fear of, you know, some kind of monster, you know, biting off your arm or something. It's just a sense of the surreal and the strange and the intrusive, you know, intruding on your world. Our world and our lives depend on stability, of things remaining the same from one second to the next. And in B.E.C.'s Poor's world, I mean, things can change just by, you know, where he is and just by your virtue of your incredible prose. So talk about, you know, that sense, your sense of the horror genre, because it's not the horror genre that, you know, of, say, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's the horror genre of, you know, Mulholland Drive.
Yes, so I really wanted the horror and the sense of fear in this novel to come not from fearing the monster or this othered figure as much as from the thought of being the othered, being other, existing in a world that was not designed with you in mind. And that draws a lot from psychiatric othering, from the pathologization of mental illness. A lot of my own experiences come into this. And I really just wanted to portray the confusion of being an other.
I love that idea of a fear not of the other, but of being the other. And that is, of course, extremely, you know, important in our current world, because you know, the people with guns and missiles are in the process of othering people who do not have those things. And so understanding a world that you can exist in but not have any control over is just really an important perspective. Also, I think that for me, at least, this book really took a page from, you know, any number of, you know, unfortunate experiments I myself perhaps made with psychedelic substances that just did not work for me the way they were supposed to. There were no illuminations for me. So I'm wondering if you would care to talk about, you know, the, you know, the surreal as an outgrowth both of internal perceptions, but also those, you know, altered perceptions.
Yes, so I can't really speak to inspiration or influence from psychedelic substances. In regards to the surrealistic quality of the novel, that was, like I said a bit earlier, very much intended to be dreamlike, or perhaps existing in that rather uncanny, confusing space between dream and waking. And I mentioned the German Expressionist movement as one of my big inspirations. Again, with the sleeping, waking, dreaming aspect, that inspiration in particular, that came from one of my all-time favorite films, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I wanted to really try capture the way that that film made me feel, that very surreal, disorienting setting. I wanted to try translate that to prose.
Mission accomplished. And that word disorienting, I think, is a important and excellent description of your approach to horror, in that what's terrifying is that these angles and these views and, you know, the not quite understanding the world around you that BEC for experiences. So just one of the things I think that you do too really well to do is to, you know, rank up the tension by, you know, just introducing us cold to BECL4. And we don't get any information from anybody else. It's the entire story is told from the third person omniscient point of view of BECL4. And so we don't even, in a sense, know exactly what BECO4 looks like. We get some descriptions from the way he's referred to by the humans he comes across. Talk about creating his, you know, the first environment he exists in, some kind of a facility for testing or labs. There's doctors, there's another BECO3, a very important constituent to the story.
Yes, so I created the setting of this research facility. I created it with the intention of feeling very sterile, very like a place that should make sense, and that to many of the characters who are in positions of power in the story, namely the doctors, it's a place that does make sense. It's a place of observation, it's a place of science, it's a place of experiment. But to BECO4, it is simultaneously one of the only spaces he's ever known. And it is at the same time a confusing space. It's a limiting space. It's often quite an overwhelming space. I emphasize the senses a lot, both in this facility setting and also later when he finds his way into the town. I wrote the setting of the facility with the intention of it being this very cold clinical place, as hospitals or psychiatric facilities often are, but at the same time, it's a place of being controlled, being othered.
Also, too, it has the feel, and I just got slow to the party, tweak to this, that, you know, there's a real feel of a place where something would take place, like out of a David Cronenberg movie, the filmmaker, you know, very much otherness. And I think that one of the things that I really like is that through the novel, the main doctor who attends to and studies and takes care of BECL4, Dr. G, we come to really like this character, even though, you know, there's a sense that maybe he's doing something really awful.
Yes, I did. I had a lot of fun writing this character. I don't want to spoil too much, but it was interesting to write a character who appears to be very benevolent and understanding, but is ultimately not quite what they seem, and is trying to think how to speak to this character without giving away too much. But I did very much want to speak to the idea of abuses of power within these institutions of psychiatry, of the hospital setting, that sort of thing.
I am guessing that when you wrote this, did you just dive in at the into the deep end of BC4's perceptions and plow ahead with only the vaguest idea of where you were going, or did you understand the whole plot structure before? Because I think one of the things that you do quite well is use character perception and characters to propel the plot and make us turn the pages, even though as we turn the pages, it's like, okay, I'm going to go into this dark tunnel filled with cobwebs. Yes, I'm going to keep going and keep making myself even more and more uncomfortable. It's a wonderful feeling because, again, it's not like we're going into a place where we're going to be harmed, just into a place where our understandings and assumptions of what's real and important in life no longer matter.
Yes, so this novel initially it was the characters that came to me first as ideas, and I just wrote down these ideas for characters, for who they are, for what they do, their personalities, and they existed as rather vague concepts for quite a long time, just vague notes that I wrote down thinking I would like to do something with this. It was quite a long process putting together all of these figures and settings, initially in just some very rough drafts that I wrote by hand in a notebook, and then going over those drafts and editing and taking out and adding and uncovering really what my intentions were with this narrative and where I wanted it to go.
So you had to dig into your own subconscious to create a subconscious world.
Yes.
Now, let's talk a little bit about BC04, because we soon realize this isn't exactly human, and it's revealed on the cover of the book, at least, that this creature has four eyes, two pairs of eyes. And I
Yes.
think that's a really odd and interesting creation, given that he also is able to do other things that most humans, at least, cannot do repeatedly under scientific investigation. So talk about creating a character who's not quite human, but we get some ideas of what he looks like. And those are interesting revelations. So talk about, again, what he can and can't do, and why the decision to have two pairs of eyes, which is creepy, but not that creepy, if you know what I mean.
Actually, the thing with the two pairs of eyes, that was one of the first things that came to me when I was putting together the very rough concepts of this character in my head initially a couple of years ago. I knew I wanted to do something to do with eyes, and I was thinking a lot about the symbolic association of eyes and of seeing and of being seen and of being able to see things that most others cannot, and also of not being able to see things that many others can. And that again goes back to the central theme of otherness and of being othered, and I suppose to an extent, disability theory, which is quite central to this narrative as well.
What do you mean by disability theory?
Disability theory here, I'm focusing mainly on psychiatric otherness, mental illness, neurodivergence. A lot of what happens in the novel, I think I mentioned earlier, comes from my own experiences with that.
What are your experiences with that? Can you talk about that?
Oh, yes. So I am autistic, and I did write the novel with intending for the character of BEC04 to reflect some aspects of my experience with that.
That's fascinating. You know, one of the things that that is clearly important in this novel is twinning and doppelgangers. BEC-04 has a doppelganger, female doppelganger, BEC-03, whom we don't see much about, and we hear a little bit about her. Talk about creating her, and was the decision to for her and the other doubles we encounter in this novel, was that an early part of the novel the conception, or is this something you discovered in the writing itself?
So BEC-03 was another very interesting character to write, and I knew from the beginning when I first started with these very vague concepts of what this story was and where I wanted it to go. I knew from the start that I wanted doubleness to be an important part of the story. And I use a lot of imagery to do with mirrors, to do with shadows. I was inspired by the Gothic trope of the dark double, which shows up a lot in a lot of horror and Gothic literature. I really wanted to play with that. I wanted to play with the idea of BEC-03 existing as this shadow of BEC-04, who is ultimately not that different to him, although she is initially characterized by others as this very volatile, shadowy, unknowable being who needs to be sealed away for her own safety and the safety of everybody else.
BEC-04 has some unusual abilities, and I just wanted to talk to you a bit about the genre of this novel in terms of both the horror, which is it's really brilliantly done because of the prose just keeps this really creepy atmosphere just completely alive, unlike anything, almost anything I've ever read. Maybe the people who first read Edgar Allan Poe's stories might have had that same kind of feeling, not having ever encountered it before. And that's one of the brilliant aspects of this book, is it's like nothing anybody who picks up a novel has ever read before. And that's hard to accomplish. On one hand, you have this kind of pervasive creepiness, but on the other hand, there's a little bit of a science fiction twinge in this novel, but it's never overt. It's never, there are no info dumps in this novel where, you know, somebody stops and goes, well, by this, I mean, blah, here's the explanation of what's going on. Did you have to excise an info dump from this novel? Would it be possible to do one? And talk about creating the science fiction aspect of it.
Well, I did not go into this novel with the idea of I want to write a science fiction novel or I want to write a horror novel. I didn't have any specific genre in mind. And I wanted to write in a way that blurs genre and a way that incorporates elements of multiple different genres of science fiction or speculative fiction, and then also the Gothic, and then horror as well.
We get, and as part of the plot, BEC has a couple of abilities that humans don't have, and also our best descriptions of what, you know, while reading this book, I'm thinking, what the hell is this thing? you know, because you really don't get a physical description. You do eventually. Talk about making the decision to reveal the physical description, you know, of the main character well into the book, and also the decision that we see pretty early on in the book of the two abilities that you know, BEC-04 has that, in a sense, drive the plot.
Again, it comes back to blurring. Just now I was talking about blurring of genre, and here I very much wanted to blur the sense of human and non-human. And I'm glad that you said that you got a sense of what the heck is this thing, because I did definitely want to play a lot with dehumanization as an extension of othering. And I think that BECO4's abilities, his physical features that imply that he is something not quite human, those were things that I really wanted to use for this character as both something through which he can gain some level of power. He does at several points use his abilities to gain control over various situations, but they're what got him in this situation in the first place. He's being studied as a specimen because of his unusual features and his unusual abilities. He is a specimen, as the title.
I must say, the title is plural.
Yes, that was very intentional. I did want to include that element of doubleness in the title because it is very important throughout the book.
One of the things that I thought was very interesting was the precautions and the fear of the humans who have to work with BECO4. And again, it's kind of hinted at their crowns that people have to wear and shields. And so it makes us feel like, you know, you're telling the story of the atom bomb, in a sense, from the perspective of uranium, refined uranium, looking out at the scientists who are just going, oh my God, this is really scary. And I think all these things just occur to me now, that by showing the fear of the humans and the precautions they take, that does all the work of, you know, monsters and giant toothy things and tentacled critters in the night. Because if these humans are so terrified of BECO4, there's something there. Yet we're right there with him, and we think he's kind of cuddly and nice, not too nice. And that, again, is the other thing, is that within this childlike being is a fully rational and relatively adult and calm and cool intellect, where, you know, and so talk about creating, you know, the character of BECO4, is he seems pretty darn reasonable, and he's not like gonna get all wedged out of shape about this. He's just going to realize he's in a situation that he has to deal with as who he is.
Yes, so fear of the unknown, that is definitely something that is quite important to BECO4's characterization, perhaps rather the characterization that other characters within the novel, the image of them that they form in their own heads, this fear of his abilities, this assumption that he would use them to gain control over them as they have gained control over him, really. They're afraid of really being subject to the same sort of things that he is.
They're afraid of being on the receiving end of the experiments that he would perform because his abilities give him some unique potential for power, or in the same way that the scientists who have locked up the BECO4 have power over him by virtue of, you know, doors, windows, locks, and the various
institution of the facility.
One of the things that, as I read this book about halfway through it, I'm pretty used to BECO4, and he goes on a little journey, and then, you know, I think you do a wonderful job of taking us down this rabbit hole, which becomes ever weirder and ever more threatening. So is that something that you knew was going to happen when you wrote the novel? And I have to say, things get to a point where it's like, okay, I've had two tabs of LSD. I'm kind of like with it. And now somebody just spiked it with 15 and I'm terrified. Talk about, expanding the plot and the world of this novel. And also just, did you imagine the world that surrounds VC from our perspective before you created it from his?
So I did know from the beginning of writing this, I knew that I wanted it to be, to get weird. And I knew that I wanted it to get dark and disorienting and confusing. And I think I may have gone a little bit overboard with the confusion factor in some regards.
It's wonderful. It's terrifying. And it's very, also too, throughout this novel, no matter how weird and terrifying and unusual and unhinged things get, there's this feeling of really of a kind of a calm beauty that pervades it and prevents it from just seeming exploitative or any one of those things. So talk about creating that sense of beauty.
So in my writing for this novel, and also just in general, I really aim to find a sort of comfort, a sort of beauty, like you said, in the uncanny and in this strange, terrifying, but also beautiful sort of world. I did want to work a lot with the Gothic in regards to this strange intersection between the terrifying and the beautiful. I wanted to work a lot with the sublime, but also just with the familiar and the beauty in familiarizing the strange.
You know, also too, because there is a section of the novel where B.C. Alvore is out in the world. And I love your sensibility of, you know, the landscape of it. It always feels like you're in like a kind of a small but isolated town. There's surrounded by forests and it's always dark and slightly dank, but not really threatened, just in that beautiful way that, you know, if you get out into the forest in the night right after it rains, it's really kind of beautiful, if not a little threatening. So, and I think that's one of the strengths of this novel is that you would do a good job at twinning the comprehensible and the everyday with the unutterably strange vision of the comfortable and everyday from the perspective of B.E.C. Alvore. He sees what he might describe something as being strange and upsetting to him, but we see it, well, you know, it's dark and quiet and kind of nice, right? Could be nice out there.
Coming back to doubles, so the opposite of, or I suppose rather the dark twin of finding beauty in the unsettling, finding familiarity in the uncanny, would be finding fear and discomfort in things that are supposed to be familiar. Mm. I think that is as important in this novel. Well, it was as important to me while I was writing it as the strange, frightening beauty of the unknown. Fear, this horror of feeling everybody is all right with this, but something is very, very wrong.
Now, you create a really interesting world, a landscape, a backdrop. And when I finished this book, I thought, she could write a lot of novels that, you know, intersect with this from different perspectives of different characters. Is this something you've considered, or are you just going to follow Monty Python's advice and now for something completely different?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I am actually currently working on a project that takes place in the same world, the same forest.
Oh, yay. Wait.
I have given a lot of thought to this forest setting and this town outside of this forest. And I do, I've come up with a lot of other characters and figures and settings within settings, I suppose. And I have some vague ideas of where I want to take this weird little world. And I am currently working on some projects for that. I'm hoping some of them might end up being published. We'll see.
Well, I would imagine that they certainly would be. Now, did you, when you wrote this book, did you like map out where you were going, or did you just go there?
I had a vague idea of where I wanted the story to go, but a lot of it did unfold and also change along the way. There were some elements that were initially going to be included that I then cut out. I thought they would be better suited to another story within the same world.
Good. So the scraps from the cutting room floor are being assembled into a new movie, so to speak.
Hopefully they'll return. They'll come back as something. I'll have to see where it all goes.
Well, I just want to mention a bit about your story, The Undertaker's Apprentice. This is online available at Granta, and I think we'll give readers a really good idea of what you're about, which is, I think for you, in reading this book and that story, you know, the central mystery is that there are mysterious things which we are not going to understand. There's more than is accounted for in your philosophy. Talk about focusing on what we do not know and cannot understand as a centerpiece of your fiction. I think this is fascinating. There are, some people who attempt that, and Lynch and Cronenberg are two that I think of. And in a sense, Lovecraft, although he had his own set of problems. So talk about focusing on the mystery and keeping it a mystery.
There's obviously a lot of narrative potential in fear of the unknown, but I think that there's also a lot of beauty in the unknown and a lot of potential for growth within the unknown. I'm thinking specifically of The Undertaker's Apprentice here, where the central motif in that story is a mystery that is never solved, and learning to, well, to the characters in that story at least, accepting the unknown, that is quite important in that story. And this acceptance and embracing of the unknown, of the uncanny, of the otherworldly is quite important throughout all my writing, I'd say.
You have used the word many times, uncanny, originally
Uncanny,
known
yes.
as unheimlich
Unheimlich.
by Mr. Freud. I'm wondering how well versed are you in his writings?
In Freud's writing,
Yeah.
I have studied some Freud at university, not particularly in depth, but I have done some research on his theories around the subconscious, of the ego and the id and the superego and all of that. And conscious is quite important to my writing. I've talked about the dreamlike influences a lot.
How do you know when you are plumbing your subconscious as a writer? I mean, how do you get there? Do you just start blindly in the prose and write, or does it and get there with the words, or does the state of writing of creation, as it were, in this case using prose, open up doors in your brain to subconscious where you can just, like, once you have achieved the flow state, so to speak, of writing, you are able to flow into places in your mind where you can't look with your conscious brain.
My ideas often come to me at very strange and inconvenient times. I have a notebook by my bed in case I wake up at 3 a.m. with some idea that needs to be written down, and then I have to try to decipher it in the morning. I also get a lot of ideas while I'm walking, which I've heard is actually quite a common space in which a lot of authors and creators get their ideas. My personal writing process is quite chaotic. I do sometimes go for rather long periods without writing anything, just letting these things all come together in the back of my head. And then one day something just clicks, and it's usually around like 1 a.m. or something. And then I'm just writing, scribbling ideas down in a notebook or typing up on my laptop. And sometimes they make sense, sometimes they don't. They have to go through a lot of editing, but that's how they get there.
Well, you know, as a writer, it sounds like to me, you have created this world within yourself and are exploring that world. Do you feel as a writer that what's more important to you, the prose or your subconscious?
I don't think I'd say that either one of them is more important than the other. I think they inform each other. Again, doubleness, two sides of the same coin, at least in my writing process. I do, on a very conscious level, do my editing and do my research. It's not all just stream of consciousness type writing. A lot of it does take a lot of effort.
What kind of research do you do? That's really interesting to me. What did you research for this book?
For this book in particular, I did look quite a bit at the archetype of the doppelganger and of the dark double figure in Gothic literature.
So your research is literary. It's not like you're looking at science or, you know, experiments that we've done on human beings at various times and glorious and inglorious aspects of history.
There are some scientific elements to this novel. Like I said, I didn't write it with the intention of being a science fiction novel. It certainly wasn't meant to be a hard sci-fi novel. That's not really the genre that I, at least at this point, that I really write in. A lot of my research has overlapped with my research for my studies at university, and I'm studying literature. So most of my research has been of a more literary nature than scientific, although I have done a little bit of medical research as well, just to get a slightly better, or a slightly fuller, I should say, portrayal of life inside this very clinical scientific setting that BCO4 lives in.
The new novel by Hannah Gammon is The Specimens. You can read her short story, The Undertaker's Apprentice, online at Granta. Thank you for joining me, Hannah.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony.